Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Hi everyone, welcome to today's episode. I'm really excited to introduce today's guest. Her name is Karen Gilbert, probably one of the most respected voices in perfumery education. I really love what she's doing because she is helping to demystify the world of fragrance creation. I think the world of perfumery is becoming much more democratic and it's less about training for 20 years in France. Like, people that want to start a perfume brand and don't know where to begin can access that world and understand how it all works. It's not shrouded in secrecy, and people like Karen are helping to bring it out of the shadows, which I'm all for, because I think that perfumery needs, well, it definitely needs to be more diverse and it needs more fresh voices. I think there's a kind of Swiss-French cultural monopoly on the world of fragrance, quite frankly, and I'm really excited that people like Karen are helping to bring it to the masses and get more people involved. She originally trained as a makeup artist and then stumbled into the fragrance world through working for IFF, and that's International Flavours and Fragrances, a huge fragrance company, one of the main ones. And she worked for 5 years as a fragrance evaluator. So what an evaluator does, they are the bridge between the client and the perfumer. So they take the client's brief and they help the perfumer interpret it, but they're the ones that are keeping a close eye and making sure that there is that commercial angle and that it ticks all the boxes, basically. So they're able to interpret the client's vision a lot more effectively, but they also understand the language of perfume, so they can help their perfumer realize that vision much more effectively than if the perfumer were just dealing with the client. And they have to be up on industry trends and what's happening in the market. And it's a really interesting role that very rarely gets spoken about, like I say, in this kind of shrouded secret world of perfumery. But it's a fascinating one. Karen has also authored several books, including Perfume, The Art and Craft of Fragrance. And she hosts a podcast herself, the Perfume Making Podcast, which I was recently a guest on. There's a lot of cross-pollination in the podcasting world, which is brilliant. And I'll include a link to that episode in the show notes too. She teaches perfumery worldwide through her Artisan Perfumery Mastermind program and from her Scent Studio, where she is based down in the New Forest, really beautiful part of the country. Would definitely recommend visiting if you haven't already. There are actually horses that just roam around free, which for me as a lifelong Londoner was just mind-blowing. In our conversation, we unpacked her career journey, debunked a lot of misconceptions about how fragrances are created. We spoke about the psychology of scent. So if you're a fragrance enthusiast or if you're just curious about the world of scent, I'm sure you will get a lot out of this chat and hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It's really lovely to have you on as a guest. Now, you started your career as an evaluator at IFF, and since then you've become like a renowned educator and author. What was it that drew you initially to the world of scent? Like, how did that journey begin?
Completely by accident. And it's, I suppose, a really unusual way of getting into the industry, because most people that I come into contact with now are so passionate about fragrance and they desperately want to get into the industry because they're so passionate about scent. I literally fell into it by accident. I was at the London College of Fashion. I was training as a makeup artist. I decided that even though I loved the course that I was doing, I preferred the cosmetic science side of it, like the lab work, if you like, the making stuff in the lab rather than being a makeup artist. And I knew that I wasn't really cut out for that sort of cutthroat fashion makeup artistry world. And so when it came to do a work placement, which we all had to do, I asked my science teacher on the program, if she could find me a work placement that wasn't going to work for a magazine or assisting a makeup artist on a job. And she found me this work placement, and it was 2 weeks. And I think I had two different options. One was the going to the body shop to work in formulation in the lab. And one was at this place called IFF that I'd never heard of. And I really wanted to do the body shop one because that was what I thought was most exciting at the time. And I'm like, fragrance lab, I don't even know what that is. But when I went for the interview, and for whatever reason, the body shop one didn't work out. So I ended up taking it was a 2 week placement, and it was in the sales office in the Hammersmith sales office for IFF. And this just like this whole world that I didn't even know about opened up. And I'd always been interested in blending essential oils, and I'd done that when I was a teenager. I think I got my first set of essential oils, an aromatherapy book, when I was about 15 or 16. But I had never really connected the two things, like aromatherapy with perfumery. It didn't even occur to me that the two things were connected back when I was a teenager. And so it was really through getting that work placement and really learning about all of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes in the fragrance world that made me realize how amazing scent is and how powerful it is. I've always been interested in well-being from a very, very young age. And one of the things that I had access to through my kind of journey, I ended up did the 2 week work placement, and then ended up, they offered me a job a few years later, actually. And a lot of the research that they were doing at the time was all about how scent can help you with your mood, how people respond to scent. So there was a lot of research at the time in something that they called aromacology, which was different from aromatherapy, where I was used to thinking about how the chemical components of an essential oil work on your skin or your physiology or your, you know, your psychology to help you feel different. But what they were doing was hooking up people to, you know, ECG, I think that's what they call it, you know, when they kind of put the monitors on your brain activity, and getting people to smell scents. So not just naturals, but just regular formulated scents as well. And monitoring, you know, what fragrances helped people to feel calmer, more energized. And it was then that I realized that actually it was more than just perfume. And I think what we did, you know, I worked on a lot of own labels. So it eventually turned into, it was applications lab at the beginning, and then it eventually turned into an evaluation job. And we were working, where I was based, we were working a lot on own label, supermarket own labels. So UK brands, so Sainsbury's, Tesco, M&S, fragrances for room sprays, for body products, for antiperspirants, for things like impulse body spray, Lynx, that kind of thing, and also for laundry detergent as well. And so what I learned through that time in my life, in that career, was that scent is not just about perfume that you spray on skin that people think of as perfume, but it goes into everything, and every little piece along the way contributes to not only the claims of a product. So if you are creating a body product that has claims that it's nourishing or, you know, skin softening, the fragrance is pivotal in supporting those claims, not from a chemistry perspective, but from a psychology perspective. And that wasn't something that as a consumer I really understood. And the fact that they were running focus groups on how a scent performed in a different product, same product, but people were perceiving the functionality of that product very differently depending on the scent that was in it. And that was something that really, really drew me in and fascinated me. So I think that is really where I fell down the scent rabbit hole, when those two things connected, where I realized that it wasn't just about something that smelled nice. It was about something that we could utilize for our own well-being as well.
I think our sense of smell, I mean, it is the most primitive of all of our senses. And I think people do tend to underestimate how powerful it is. and the effect it has on us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I remember writing about for an essay in a training that I did back in the early days. And that was, I think, I can't even remember what the topic of the essay was that I had to write. So I did some training with IFF, and I did I think it's called ICATS now, the Plymouth University Fragrance and Business Training. And it was all about the, you know, the origins of scent and our sense of smell and how that all works. And that's something that I weave into a lot of my training now, the teaching that I do, because I think it's something that, I suppose it's a little bit like preaching to the choir. If you've come in to learn about how to create fragrance or more about fragrance, you understand the power of your sense of smell. But I don't think people really, on a day-to-day level, unless they lose it for some reason, appreciate the power of what we have in our nose. And people think about it as the nose, training your nose, but it really is the brain connection that makes it so powerful. It's about the way that we as human beings process smell. It's connected to our hypothalamus, our limbic system, which regulates so many other things in our physiology, you know, our body temperature, our behaviors, our hormonal regulation as well. And obviously the one that everybody talks about, it's where we process our memories, and that's why it's so intrinsically linked. But I love talking about that stuff. I think it's such a powerful way to learn about your sense of smell and scent. And I think it's fundamental for anyone learning how to create fragrance. Understanding how people process smell is just fundamental. You can't learn to make a perfume if you don't understand how the sense of smell works.
Definitely. And do you think now that more and more people are kind of waking up to how our sense of smell works and the power of scent, that we're choosing perfumes or buying perfumes, wearing perfumes in a different way, that we're not necessarily wearing them to smell good for others, although, you know, we still can do that and there's nothing wrong with that, but we're also just wearing them just to smell, just to feel good in ourselves, rather than this outward objective appearance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's something that I did a little bit of research on way back when, and it's something that I've always believed. I think now what's happening, I've been talking about scent and well-being for, I don't know, well over 15 years now, many, many years. And for me, it was always about how does this smell, how does this perfume, how does this combination of scented materials make me feel? And the marketing that we were seeing at the time, going back to sort of 80s, 90s, I suppose even early 2000s, it was all about aspirational lifestyle. Yes. It was still very much entrenched in that 70s, 80s vibe of, you know, wear this perfume and, you know, you'll get the guy, the girl, it was very aspirational. It was very lifestyle. It was very sexualized. And when I actually thought about that myself as a consumer, it's like, it didn't really make sense to me personally. And I ran a little poll of my audience, you know, why do you wear perfume? And pretty much everyone said, because it makes me feel good. It's that spritz of a scent before a night out. It's that if I'm feeling a little bit crappy or not confident, I just, you know, my favorite, this a particular smell, a particular scent that I can spritz on, and it just makes me feel much better. Mm. And that is something that brands weren't exploring until lots of us out there in the blogosphere and the kind of indie artisan world, where actually a lot of people came in from natural perfumery by way of aromatherapy and well-being. And I think a lot of the brands now are talking about it, and it's become, you know, functional fragrances, wellness in perfume has been a trend over the last few years since COVID, actually, I think. But before that, we were talking about it. Like, there were lots and lots and lots of us, and aromatherapists have been talking about it, but the industry didn't connect the two.
No.
And it feels like it's only just caught up.
Or there's like BS where in regards to pheromone scents, which
Don't even get me started. It's so funny, that whole pheromone thing. I had a few journalists approach me, and in hindsight, Bless, Sarah did really well on it. She took on the challenge and went like head, went head to head with them. And for me, I should have done that, but I was just like, I'm not even talking about this because it's just nonsense. And I just sort of brushed it away. Whereas Sarah was just like, no, I'm going to go in there and talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't even be bothered because it's just such nonsense. But yeah, I think there is that. I think it's the industry trying to capitalize still on that. Oh, we wear perfume to make us sexy and attract the opposite sex. It's like such an old trope that's nonsense. And the only way that they can try and like pull that in now is through, oh, this scent is pheromones. I mean, do we really believe that? I think people maybe want to believe it.
Yeah.
Is it a guy thing, do you think? Do you think a lot of the people who fall for that pheromone scent are men wanting to attract women? Do women really believe
that?
That?
I was literally talking to somebody about this morning, that I watched a TikTok video, and it's a guy, a content creator. He's got an affiliate link at the bottom of the screen, selling a perfume. And he was telling this story about how he met a girl on a dating app, met up with her. She didn't look anything like her picture. He didn't fancy her, but she was wearing this scent that he couldn't get out of his mind, and suddenly he was just wildly attracted to her. And if you want to shop this scent, blah 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 blah. So
I think I've seen the same one.
It's
It's
wild,
such
isn't
nonsense.
It's like, don't women really fall for that?
But it's the same trope, isn't it? As
yes.
the, oh, you know, if you wear this fragrance, you too are going to be wearing a designer gown, running through hallways to meet the man of your dreams. I mean,
Yeah, I mean,
really?
I love that there is that kind of escapist element that you can become this sort of hyper-real version of yourself, this fantasy version of yourself
Yeah.
through scent, which I kind of like. That is lovely. But to try and ground it in this scent will make this person, will dupe this person into falling for you, like it's like love potion number 9, I think is
Well, it is that as well, isn't it? It's
absolute
that
nonsense.
Disney, it's Disneyfying it, I think. It's like, oh, you know, this magic spell will kind of like
Yeah.
call in your, you know, your love. You know, just, yeah.
Exactly. I remember I used to go to these like under 16s disco nights when I was like about 13, and they actually had, you know, those like vending machines with little like bouncy balls and things like that. But they had a vending machine of pheromone wipes. I remember it clearly, that you put a
Oh
pound in,
no.
got this packet of pheromone, don't know what was on the
Oh my God, I can't even, I
serviette thing.
can't
I don't
even
know what
imagine.
they put in it, but
Did you fall for it at 16?
no, luckily I wasn't rich enough to even have the money to even. I remember being intrigued, being like, "Oh, what's that all about?" But yes, it is
How
just
funny.
crazy how that, you know, there is that, like you say, this really beautiful, rich array of knowledge and information that isn't tapped into, but yet there is all this nonsense out there that people are kind of pushing forward instead, when they could be telling a more authentic story in a way that's a lot more powerful and a lot more.
Yeah, it's pitching to the lowest common denominator rather than putting the effort in and creating a story around the scent. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but it's something that I think both of us agree on. Like the story in scent creation is so much more powerful. And it's something that a lot of mainstream brands still are not doing very well.
No. I was speaking to Nick and Pia at Old Fiction about this, and I think Pia said that a lot of brands probably wouldn't want to sort of change the story they've been telling for so long, because it would probably affect them commercially, because, you know, it seems to, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Kind of
Exactly. Yeah, I guess
put
so.
it much more eloquently than I did, but that's kind of.
Yeah. And I think that if we're talking, you know, big commercial brands, obviously that's entrenched in history. And I think it's different, though. When you look at brands that have got heritage for many, many, you know, it just tells itself. And I think it doesn't always need new stories, because
No.
there's so much there already in the history. But I think if you're a new brand, if you're a small indie, you definitely do have to lean into story, because I see a lot of brands talking about, oh, well, you know, we use the best quality materials, or, you know, talking about their fragrances in terms of scent notes. And that doesn't really tell you anything about how the perfume smells.
No, exactly. Especially, I mean, we know about fragrance and are embedded in that world. But if you're a consumer off the street, you're not going to know what tonka bean is compared.
And even if you do, even if you look at a scent pyramid on a website and you see all of the notes there, it doesn't give you any indication about what that fragrance smells like, because you could have three different fragrances with the same scent notes on the same pyramid and they would smell completely different. It's all about, you know, what else is in there that they don't talk about, you know, how it's arranged in terms of structure and the ratios of the materials. You know, is it a tonka forward fragrance, and is it like really kind of sweet and powdery, or is that just a hint in the back note? You can't really tell from looking at scent notes like that. So yeah, I think story is much, much more helpful.
Definitely. It's about evoking a mood or an image or something that gives you kind of, it, obviously you can never capture in words what something smells like, but it gives you an idea of, okay, if you're this kind of person and you appreciate this kind of, you know, imagery or atmosphere, then you might like this scent. But still, there is, it is a challenge. And I think that's kind of what people underestimate. And I know that you've taught thousands of students over the years. What are some of the other misconceptions people have when it comes to fragrance creation?
I think it's changing a lot. So if I kind of dial it back to when I first stepped back into the industry, so I was out of the industry for quite a long time, about 6 or so years, doing something completely different. And I decided back in 2010 to come back into teaching perfumery, and, you know, for a variety of reasons personally. It was more for my own sanity and mental health than anything, actually. I never intended it to turn into a business, actually. It was just a sort of side gig, hobby, from my day-to-day business that I was running that was driving me nuts. But what I realized when I started to do research is that people at that time, and I think it has changed a lot now, I think there's less gatekeeping now, I think it's a lot more open, but there was this huge misconception, I suppose, that the only way that you could make perfume or be a perfumer was to go to one of the big industry schools, that you had to have a chemistry degree, otherwise you wouldn't, there's no way you could learn to make perfume, that you couldn't be self-taught or make perfumes safely that people would buy without having the tutelage of a master perfumer who had been in the industry for a long time. And one of the things that people didn't realize is that there was so much smoke and mirrors and in the industry, and a lot of the, you know, all of the fragrances that we see commercially are really only made by a very, very few companies. So everything from, you know, Dior, I mean, I don't know about Dior now. I'm probably, don't quote me on this, because I don't know what, because a lot of the big companies now have in-house perfumers. But, you know, mainstream commercial fragrance brands, generally, they pitch to all of the fragrance houses, and you might have a collection of fragrances from a brand and one perfume is made by IFF, another one is made by Givaudan, another one might be made by a smaller fragrance house. And it's a very tiny industry in terms of commercial fragrance. Like, volume is huge, but there weren't many people, and there are not really still many kind of perfume, you know, commercial perfumers out there who are working in the industry. And I think a lot of people didn't realize that actually, you know, UK, it is something that you can learn. There's a really specific reason, I think, why the commercial fragrance industry trains perfumers the way that they do, and why it takes as long as it does. And don't get me wrong, you know, they're masters at their craft and they are very, very, very highly trained. But the commercial fragrance industry, the majority of the business, I suppose, the volume in terms of sales, comes from selling, you know, tons of fragrance to big brands, big organizations, things like Unilever, P&G. And a lot of that fragrance work is based around creating scents for laundry detergent, functional products like toilet cleaner, products that you actually need to be a technical, you need to be a very proficient technical perfumer to create fragrances like that. Creating a fragrance for an alcohol base is so much simpler in terms of how it's going to perform than creating a fragrance for a laundry detergent that's got to last through a wash, or creating a fragrance for a toilet cleaner that has got this bleach back note, or for an air freshener aerosol that needs to cover a malodor. For me, they're very, very different. And so what I teach, what I talk about a lot, is artisan perfumery. So I'm not training people to go into the industry. And I think if you want to go into the industry and become a commercial perfumer, you really do have to go through those steps, because it's a very different world. And those perfumers, they have to know their materials inside out, because they're not hands-on with materials every day. They're formulating on a spreadsheet on a computer. This image where you've got every perfumer surrounded by a great organ full of materials is a massive myth. You know, they are at their desk tapping away into spreadsheets. They're formulating in their head. They know exactly what 0.1 increase of a particular material is going to do within that formulation. And that takes many, many years, like decades of perfection and study. And also they have access to historical formulas that the companies have been using. And, you know, they do a lot of GCMS analysis on other companies' fragrances. So, you know, this is something that comes up a lot, where the dupes and the clones, you know, copycat perfumes. And what people don't talk about is the fact that the industry do that anyway. I said to someone the other day, it was on a post on Instagram, that most people don't realize that industry, but the big companies, they're always analyzing their competitors' fragrances using GCMS and then doing a twist. And, it's not really copying. It's
a lot of the commercial perfumery, the world of commercial perfumery is just everything seems to smell the same. Is that why?
Yeah. And the industry in itself is built on plagiarism, if we're going to be really brutally honest. But it's like remixing things. And I suppose it's like the music industry. Every industry remixes ideas from the past. But literally, you know, ripping a fragrance formulation from a GCMS and kind of going, okay, like, how can we trickle this down into a fragrance for a body spray or an own label air freshener? And being transparent, the companies that produce the originals also create copycats of those originals and sell those to different companies as well. And I think people think that the clone and the dupe companies, who do we think is actually making these perfumes for the dupe and the clone companies? It's the same, you know, and why have they not said anything about it? It's because the same companies are still making the money from them at the end of the day. They're still creating those formulations. And, you know, of course, like, they're all trying to compete with each other. So they are inventing molecules and keeping them what we call captives. So if you have a captive molecule and you're someone like IFF, what it means is you're not selling, you've invented that thing, that component, and you're not selling that to Givaudan perfumers or, you know, perfumers, Robertet perfumers. You only are keeping it for your own perfumers to use, which means that it won't pop up on a GCMS because people don't know it exists. And that happened many, many years. Like, when I was in the industry, you know, we tried to copy Angel so many times, but the company that made it, Quest at the time, they had a component that was a captive molecule. So no one could get close to it until it got to a point where, you know, they'd almost squeezed all the juice out of that particular material, that molecule, that scent direction. And then they sold it to other, you know, other perfumers could buy it. And so then you were able to get much, much closer to a copy of Angel, because they had that captive. It was available for everyone. So I think there's still a lot of smoke and mirrors. I think there's a lot more scope now, that a lot of people are becoming, especially consumers as well, becoming a lot more educated. There's a lot more education out there. And my mission, I think, when I first started back in 2010, teaching again, was to demystify the industry for people who wanted to do it for themselves. And originally I didn't ever intend to teach people how to create fragrances to launch brands. It was literally doing a one-day natural perfume making class for people to come and learn how to make their own perfume for themselves. Mm. And that was that. That was really all it was for.
More of a hobby.
For well-being. Yeah. And then I started to get people asking me, well, you know, what about synthetics? Could you teach a class with mixed media? And then people started to say, oh, well, yeah, but I want to launch my own brand. Do you teach people how to do that as well? And then I developed my first online course. And because it was global, I wrote my book and I published, the book was published in 2013, the perfume book. And it gave me a bit more of a global audience who couldn't come maybe to the UK to a one-day class. And so that was when I launched my first online course. And at the time, people said to me, well, how can you learn perfume making online? That's impossible. And we managed it. And I had people join and, you know, dive into it. And, you know, many of them have got their own brands now. And yeah, I think people were still of that view that you have to be physically in the room with someone helping you to learn how to make perfume. And that is so, so not true. Yeah, of course, if you have no accountability, you're not going to do the work, then of course it's harder. And actually having someone else outside of you to evaluate what you create, again, that is really invaluable. But if you put the work in and you're dedicated, there is no reason why you can't do it with some help and advice and the knowledge, you know, that we all provide. There are so many of us now teaching people perfumery and outside of the industry. And I think there's so much more available now that it is possible if you are an artisan and you want to do this for yourself. It's a bit like as an Indian artisan, you're the person making the handmade couture garment. And the commercial industry is kind of like the Primark.
Hmm.
And they're very different. You wouldn't say, well, there's no room for a handmade dress because we've got Primark.
Exactly. There are two different
markets. You just wouldn't compare them.
Courses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think people do get caught up with the fact that, well, there's no room in the industry, it's already oversaturated. And I do agree, it's a massively saturated market now, especially with small indies, artisans, you know, people launching brands all the time, and the commercial launches, thousands of commercial launches every year now. And it's very easy to think, well, there's no more room in the market. And I think there's no real more room in the market for more crappy fragrances. But I do think that there's room for something with a really strong story, whether that is the fragrance story, the brand story, the founder story even, and something that is really tapping into an emotion or a feeling that someone connects with.
Definitely, because the opportunities are endless, really, aren't they, for that unique storytelling where you're really saying something different. I mean, the world of our, you know, of scent and our sense of smell is just so vast and fascinating. And I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg when talking about it, definitely in a commercial sense. We're nearly at the end of our time, and I could honestly chat about this with you, you know, all day. But one thing I really wanted to ask you is, how important is fragrance when it comes to brand development? Because I really liked what you said earlier about how scent can really influence a consumer's perception of a product. If we say this is nourishing and it has a certain scent, it makes them more inclined to believe that it is nourishing. I mean, I'd love to hear more about, how fragrance can influence the development of a brand.
It's huge. I mean, my background, both as an evaluator back in the day at IFF and when I worked in product development at Neil's Yard after that, was all about the customer journey. So when you are whether you're developing a fragrance for a brand who are putting together the base product, whether it's the lotion, the shampoo, the whatever, or you're developing the full product, you really, really have to ask yourself, what is it that I want this customer, this user, this end user to feel an experience when they use my product. And it's not about functional ingredients. I mean, it depends what you're making. Functional ingredients obviously are important. And if you are making claims about a particular ingredient on a skincare product, you know, obviously it's got to be in there. But I think people underestimate the psychological power of how something smells. And even if you've got a product that is very, very functional, people still want a sensory experience with it. And at the very least, it can't smell horrible. So it's got to be pleasing to use. It's got to be an enjoyable experience, whether it's you washing your dishes or whether you're washing your hair or whether you're putting cream on your feet. You know, it's still got to make sense in the product. And this is something that I teach in all of my programs, actually, that you've got to start thinking about it as a supporting, you know, it's a fundamental supporting role in how that fragrance, that product is going to be sold and perform. Because we, as human beings, we're always looking for clues all over the place about whether we've made the right choice when we're buying something. And so I think if you're creating a fragrance, like, you know, an alcohol-based skin perfume that's a fragrance for fragrance sake, I think that's one thing. That's a different beast, if you like. There's got to be the sort of, it's the aspirational, the story, the feeling, you know, all of that. That's a bit more abstract. But if you're creating fragrances for a different product type, whether that is a reed diffuser or a shampoo or a body product, you really, really have to make sure that what you are saying to the customer about what your product is going to do has a supporting fragrance with it that also says that same thing to the customer. Because if there's a disconnect, it doesn't matter how good the ingredients in your product are or how well that product actually physically performs, the customer is going to be choosing it from a range of other products on a shelf, primarily by whether they believe what you say on the packaging and the smell. That's their first touch point. And so we've all done it, right? We've all kind of gone to a supermarket or a, you know, Boots, and we all flip the cap and have a sniff, don't we, if it's not sealed up. Like, we don't not do that. Because, and I don't know what we think we're going to achieve, but it's something that maybe it goes back to that primitive, you know, sniffing something to make sure it's not off or poisonous.
Yeah.
I think it's a primitive thing.
Definitely. Because you're saying that scent is kind of like a salesperson for this product.
It's always... Yeah, absolutely. It has to be, because if it's fragrance free and you've got some of these amazing base oils that have got all of these enriching, you know, gorgeous properties, but they smell rancid, it doesn't matter how good that product actually physically is.
No.
People are really going to be repelled by it. And so you need extra work in the scent there to entice the person to buy it so that they can actually use it and get the benefit. So yeah, it is that. Yeah, it's exactly that. It's a salesperson for your product.
Well, Karen, like I say, I could chat about all this stuff with you all day, but thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And it was so lovely having you on the podcast.
You're very welcome.
Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it.